You're listening to the WP Tonic, WordPress and Tech, focused on building a successful business in WordPress aimed at the WordPress professional and power user. Join Jonathan Denwood and Kurt Von Annen as your host and co-host as we bring you great discussions from around the globe.
Welcome back, folks, to the WP Tonic Show this week in WordPress and SaaS. In this show, we've got a returning friend of the show and a personal friend. We've got Chris Badgett, the CEO and joint founder of Lifter LMS, a leading LMS plugin in the WordPress space and a entrepreneur and somebody that's passionate about e-learning in general. Should be a great show. We're going to be discussing AI, how AI will affect e-learning, how it will affect WordPress, running a WordPress business in the next couple of years, where we are with Gutenberg, all sorts of stuff. It should be a fascinating discussion. So, Chris, would you like to quickly give us a quick introduction to the new listeners and viewers that maybe not heard you on this show before?
Sure. I'm Chris from Lifter LMS, leading learning management system for WordPress. We've been doing that for about 10 years. Before that, I ran a WordPress agency focused in e-learning, so I've been at this game for a while. I live in the mountains of Maine. I'm a course creator myself. I like dogs and long walks in the woods.
He likes his walks with his dogs. And I've got my co-host, my ever-patient co-host, Kurt. Kurt, would you like to quickly introduce yourself to the new listeners and viewers?
Yeah, Kurt Von Annen. I own an agency called Manana Nomas. We focus largely on learning and membership websites, and I work directly with WP Tonic and the great folks at Lifter LMS. So this will be fun.
Yeah, should be a great show. We've got some great topics. But before we go into the meat and potatoes of this podcast, I've got a couple of major messages from our sponsors. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Hi there, e-commerce store owner. At Omnisend, we help more than 100,000 e-commerce customers just like you sell their products. We're an all-in-one email and SMS marketing platform that helps you reach your customers, grow your audience, and increase sales. In fact, our customers have seen incredible results with Omnisend, averaging $72 in revenue for every single dollar spent. And if you ever have a question, our award-winning customer support team is available 24/7 every single day. That's one of the reasons we have more than 6,000 glowing reviews and ratings all across the web. So get started with Omnisend today and start growing your business with better email and SMS marketing.
I'm coming back, folks. Also want to point out we've got some fabulous special offers from the major sponsors, plus a curated list of the best WordPress plugins and services for the WordPress professional or power user. You can find all these goodies by going over to wp-tonic.com/deals. wp-tonic.com/deals. You'll find all the goodies there, all the free or discounted goodies there. What more could you ask for? Probably a lot more, but that's all you're going to get from that page. I'm sorry to disappoint you, beloved WordPress professionals. I've made a career of it. So there we are. So, Chris, let's go straight into it. So I think one of the exciting things is maybe how AI could really affect education and especially, not solely, but especially online education in the possibilities of really customizing a learning process for an individual. Have you been thinking of how this might affect, and do you get excited? And also, what are some of the challenges around what I've just laid out, Chris?
Yeah, I definitely get excited about it. And there are challenges. And just to start with the challenges, AI in today's form is not really a full replacement for anything, but it is surely an amplifier for a lot of things. And looking at e-learning specifically, the first thing is it's a complex topic because there's a lot of stakeholders you've got teachers, so how do teachers use AI? You got students, how do students use AI? You have LMS website building professionals, how do they use AI? You've got entrepreneurs who are selling information and coaching and building communities online. How do they use AI? So we can go down a lot of different paths. But just to zoom out for a second, the whole purpose of learning is to, you know, get better, improve, skill acquisition, even entertainment. And over time in human history, there's been a lot of disruptions or innovations, I should say, whether it's the printing press, the internet, online education just becoming a thing. And this AI thing is kind of a new chapter. So if you look at things like, where do people go to learn stuff? They used to be constrained geographically and financially. And YouTube, as an example, has had a big disrupting force on learning. People still go to colleges and regular school and grade school. A lot of people go to YouTube to learn things or take online courses to learn things or get an online coach to learn things. Join an online community to learn things. So what AI does is it affects all of those things, but it's an accelerant. So the biggest challenge is really when any of these stakeholders kind of turns a blind eye and doesn't invest in learning this new technology. So the people that do, who do commit to learning how to use AI, to explore it, to keep up with what's going on, have a huge advantage going forward. So for teachers specifically, starting with them, I do this. Like later today, I'm doing a demonstration of how to do an e-learning site with Paid Memberships Pro and Lifter LMS. And I needed a sample course. So I went to ChatGPT and asked it to create an outline for a dog training course that I could use.
You've got dogs on the mind, Chris.
I come from a background of training dogs. I used to run sled dogs in Alaska and all kinds of things. But by using AI as a research tool to accelerate progress, I saved myself about an hour of coming up with a dog training course of my own by just letting ChatGPT do it for me. Now, if I was creating a real course that I was going to sell and I was really investing in creating a dog training course, I would not just copy and paste from ChatGPT and, you know, possibly find some AI video tool to create my lesson content. But I would use AI to augment my knowledge, find gaps in my knowledge, help me find what the market most wants to learn, how to best structure, how to best order that. So that's teachers. So when you design curriculum or let's say you're creating a coaching program, I'm a big fan of three legs of a stool to create a strong e-learning platform, which would be courses, coaching, and community. And so we talked a little bit about instructional design and course outlining using artificial intelligence. But then when it comes to coaching, the way coaching works is essentially either in a private one-on-one or group format, people come to you with challenges, and your job as a coach is to help them, you know, better understand their problem and figure out a solution, not necessarily tell them exactly what to do, though you can consult as well. But true coaching is helping the person figure it out. And when a coach has AI as a resource, it can really help that coach find, you know, understand the problem, find possible solutions, and basically do research, pattern matching, and help guide the coach. So if you think about prompts or prompt engineering or whatever, this is how to think about artificial intelligence. Instead of asking the AI to just give me the answer, let's say I was trying to help somebody who was having trouble getting clients for their business. If I was coaching an entrepreneur, I might go to the artificial intelligence and say, you know, help me. These are all the things I know, running an agency as an example, about how to get clients. What am I missing? And it's going to fill in some knowledge gaps for me. And then I might ask it, well, I'm trying to help this person. This is their unique situation. And can you kind of customize it to that situation? So it does it. And then I add my own insights and ideas on top of that. And then as a coach, I might say, now help me deliver that so I don't overwhelm the person and maybe explain it more simply or chunk this into a multi-step process. So I'm using AI more as a co-pilot for me than as just trying to get it to do my job for me.
Yeah, what you're describing there is a kind of blend of personal assistant and coach, but we are far from that. Where how far is the debatable? You know, there's some people who are experts in artificial intelligence that say we're in a 2, maybe 5 year only span where we're going to see what you've just outlined. Other people say it's going to be quite a distance out, 5 to 10 years, maybe. What's your own feelings on that?
I've done a lot of research on exponential technology. I think this issue is actually easier to understand, not in the e-learning, but if we look at AI and the healthcare industry. I believe AI is exponentially better. I think we're on ChatGPT-4 now, and then 5 is going to be amazing. It's going to come fast. 6 is going to come even faster and be 10 times better. I believe we're, you know, rounding out on an exponential curve. So I'm in the camp that it's going to come fast. And the part that we don't know, like currently as an example, ChatGPT has an IQ of approximately 110. And it can deduce that by, you know, taking various tests and stuff that humans take. And if you look at artificial intelligence,
it depends how much credibility you give to those IQ tests, doesn't it?
That's true too. That's a whole other debate. But one of the interesting things is we've already crossed the Rubicon. The big test developed, I believe, in the 50s. About when do we actually have real artificial intelligence is when we pass what's called the Turing test, which is when a human cannot tell the difference between an AI and a real human being. That's what the movie, great movie recommendation, by the way, Ex Machina, highly recommend it, came out a while ago. But essentially, if you were kind of talking to ChatGPT, the response you're getting could be an email from a human being. And if you didn't know you were using an AI tool, you might just think it's a human. So essentially, we've already crossed the Turing test. We've seen demonstrations on video of AI, you know, placing a food order for somebody over the phone and all this stuff. Like, we're already past the Turing test. So where this whole thing gets really interesting and uncharted territory is when we get into, you know, what's known as artificial general intelligence, where if this is in fact an exponential technology, not only will artificial intelligence be smarter than the smartest person on Earth, artificial intelligence can become smarter than all humans on Earth combined.
I see where you're coming from. But, you know, you might be totally correct. The only remark I would say about that, Chris, is ever more sophisticated language model is not general AI. And even though it can mimic, and you mentioned the Turing test, and the technology that we got at the present moment would probably pass that test, but it is only a sophisticated, a very impressive language model, but it has its limitations, which we can see quite clearly. What you're talking about is general intelligence, and I'm not sure. I think we are, for understandable reasons, confusing a very sophisticated learning model with the possibility of general intelligence, but that's my, and we're mixing it all up into a hot brew, but that's my interpretation. We're mixing up question one or two, but I've got one quick follow-up question, and then I'll throw it over to Kirk to maybe question three. I've been a bit disappointed. One of the reasons why I got into the web and web development and WordPress, Chris, is that I thought access to all information would enable people, the barriers to people to learn and to prosper would expand enormously with access to information, like information that you could only go to a library if you, or information that you would only have access to if you were attending a prestige university. And having all this information in, being able to access it through a browser or through your mobile device would fundamentally change society. And in some ways it has, but unfortunately in other ways it hasn't at all. That the terrible fact, and I think I'm correct in this, I'm sure you're going to be able to correct me if I'm not, is that most of the population, to some extent, has very average IQ, that the bell curve, the difference in their IQ level wouldn't fundamentally would describe the difference in outcome to the happiness of their life or the things they could do. But we're not seeing that. We're actually seeing, in some ways, a reversal. Have you been surprised and disappointed? And do you got any insight before I throw it over to Kurt?
So just so I understand what you're asking, you're saying that you had higher hopes for the open web to transform society, right? And it has for some, but I understand what you're saying. I mean, has the open web contributed to the lives of everybody, regardless of background or intelligence, equally? And I don't think it has.
Would you agree with the statement I made that the bulk of the population, from 70 to 80%, have a IQ level that other factors are more powerful than their actual IQ level?
I believe in the theory of multiple intelligences. And so like just a single IQ level is like, but is not something I super focus on a lot, because I believe people have a lot of different strengths. But in terms of benefiting from the open web, the way I think about that is information is just media, web pages, videos. And then we have social media, and then we have entertainment media, books or media on paper, magazines, newspapers. It's all just media. So, and because of the internet, I think what's happened, and artificial intelligence is actually the same, our human biology and evolution, we're still kind of, the technology is changing much faster than our biology is adapting to it. So similarly, when everybody got access to the internet, when our biology doesn't keep up with the rate of our tool creation and change, like being able to build weapons back in the day and forge metal and stuff literally changed society. But we kind of evolve with that, and culture and macroeconomics and stuff changes. But things are changing so fast now with the tools that we create that it's disorienting. There's downsides to it, like people getting addicted to social media, addicted to entertainment media. It's really easy for things to get out of balance. Similar to when the technology of alcohol was newly introduced in the United States and how that affected Native Americans, because they didn't have the long history that, let's say, European people of European ancestry had, so they've adapted to it more over time. This is what it's like with technology. It's like the Wild West, and there's a lot of stimulation and all these things, and we're just trying to keep our heads above water. But you know, this is the function of education in society, or what it should be, which is to help people learn and grow in a positive direction. So education holds the biggest opportunity to help us healthily navigate forward through rapid change and innovation, and try to leverage these things to our advantage, not just personally, but collectively and for all. So that's one of the reasons why I feel strongly about making Lifter LMS open source, having the free core version that's really valuable. It's for everybody. It's not just for people who can afford to buy the software and come from an entrepreneurial background or whatever. It can be picked up anywhere. And that's sort of, you know, what WordPress is all about, is democratizing publishing. I'm trying to democratize education. And yes, but the world is it's a wild place. And I, you know, with a lot of people, you know, quitting Facebook as an example, or getting caught up in social media, it's still real life. I mean, this media is like part of us, and that's why there's just so many challenges in society, because we're just trying to deal with the media, and it affects us positively and negatively. It gives us.
I think to recap, you're saying that the technology is, we don't, because we're in the water, we don't realize how things have changed so rapidly, and we're just trying to cope with the change. We haven't really worked out how it will fundamentally. We're in the early days.
We are the early days. So, like, I mean, this is why we write science fiction as a society, is like we try to explore the future and what it might look like. And some of it's dystopian, some of it's optimistic. All three of us on this call grew up in a world before cell phones. Now I can send an AI agent out in the world to like go do stuff. Like, it's a very different world. That change is only accelerating. I mean, I think we can remember to our childhoods, you know, you had the record player, then the tape, then the CD, and then 1,000 songs in your pocket, and then like Spotify. And that's just a huge change fast.
Well, over to you, Kurt. I think we're on question three.
Question three deals with, what are the biggest challenges that a company like Lifter LMS would face competing against SaaS competitors and stuff like that? So if we think of, you know, Kajabi, Udemy, you know, the standard names in the space, of which there are hundreds, right? So there's lots of tools for learning. Lifter LMS is a standout. Obviously, you know, with my relationship with you, I've chosen it. But what do you think are the main challenges that Lifter LMS faces with these types of SaaS platforms, especially in consideration of how quickly they're integrating AI into their workflows?
There's a lot of challenges. Some of them are just WordPress challenges in general. So, it's the same question in a sense of like, how is Wix doing all this, or, you know, and then WordPress is trying to quote keep up, or Wix has more marketing and things like that. So there's more money in SaaS, and with more money, it's just that creates more opportunity for marketing and improving products faster, say building bigger teams and so on. So that's a challenge. In the learning niche specifically, sometimes I scratch my head. I was thinking about Anker, who sold Teachable to somebody in Mexico, I believe, for $200 million. And this was, and I think it's a company based out of Mexico. And I think about that. And I remember when Teachable started, it was around the same time as Lifter LMS. It used to be called Fedora. And as we started, I noticed how we were already like further along in terms of what was possible to create than what Teachable could do. And if you look at it today, it's like 10x more opportunity with Lifter by itself. And then you tag on the WordPress ecosystem and, all these other tools like you have in the WP Tonic hosting. That platform is way more powerful than what a SaaS tool can do, yet the economics of it is not necessarily the same. So that's a challenge. In terms of integrating AI into learning software, we play around with it. We actually have it in our academy. So there's a what's called the course plan challenge that helps people figure out what their topic is and outline their first course and stuff. We have some AI tools that interview people to figure out, you know, their what's called their ikigai and kind of pick a course topic and then create an outline from that and move forward. You know, and our goal eventually is to put that, make it so that that can create actually an importable outline and just accelerate the friction removal of going from idea to course implemented on the website. Some of the AI tools in e-learning right now are just kind of what I'd call interesting, but it's trying to do too much in the sense that it's putting the human out of the way. So I forget which tool it is, has like create a course with AI and like, okay, well, make me a course about this. And it just like spits out an outline, just like I was talking about earlier. But if I was creating a real course, that's a nice feature, but I would really need to inject my own personal experience, insights, and work with it to actually make great content. I think the biggest opportunity for AI and e-learning, which is more of an opportunity for WordPress as a whole, is that we have all this open source software that the AI can easily get access to. It's not a closed system like a Teachable or a Kajabi that's just one business sitting over here. So whether it's the web hosts or other entrepreneurs that can figure out how to prompt engineer an entire website or an entire online learning platform, that's where the big opportunity is. So, for example, this week, Siren Affiliates launched a powerful tool that makes it even easier to build a site like Udemy or Netflix or Masterclass with all these referral programs and royalty shares and all this stuff. So if you could go to an AI interface and say, build me a Udemy clone, it could suck in, you know, Lifter, Siren, what other tools you need, and essentially in seconds or a minute, build literally a clone. And then, you know, as an entrepreneur and as a unique human being, I would take my own touch and, you know, customize it further to be my thing. And that's possible with open source software. That's not possible with hosted SaaS solutions. So this is where WordPress can win, is by being open source. It allows the people that, you know, are the AI tools that can curate and grab and write custom code and stuff to really build something truly unique. And I think that's where we're going. I don't know how long it's going to take to get there. I think we're probably, I know some web hosts are starting to do that. Like, hey, build me a brochure site. I'm a flower shop or I'm a pizza restaurant. And it does a decent job. But once you start getting deeper into web applications, not just brochure websites for businesses, I think it gets really interesting.
Yeah. And then just to kind of follow up on kind of almost blending all those three questions together, I almost sense that with AI, there's a change in the basic formula of what learning is for the vendor and for the student. So, I go back, like you mentioned cell phones. Like I can still remember childhood friends' phone numbers from the first grade. Like we used to have to memorize all those phone numbers. And now I probably can't tell you what my son's phone number is because it's a speed dial in my cell phone, right? There's like a certain laziness to the learner. And in my corporate training experience, I had to change my mindset from, I don't want my students to have to remember everything about how a car is built. I need them to know where to find the information for those specifications, right? And so I think AI is greatly affecting that easy button learning mentality. So we're not hard coding our brains with new knowledge in a lot of cases. In a lot of cases, we're saying, where's that quick answer? And it's difficult in an e-course in an e-learning platform to try and come up with that magic switch.
Yeah, my friend Danny Inney said this many years ago, that we've moved from just-in-case education to just-in-time.
Yeah.
And this is where the coaching industry is kind of born from. Like, you're going for, like, with a specific problem I need help with right now. It's not about building the Library of Alexandria in your head to, like, someday I might need this information. We're much more... I agree with you that it's kind of lazy, and there is a place for classical, you know, liberal arts or general education. But the world, this is part of that exponential technology. Industries are getting disrupted. People lose jobs, economics and all this stuff. People are moving faster than they ever have before. This creates a lot of stress and anxiety and different things in the world. But just in time, there's lots of reasons to learn. Maybe you need something, or you need to learn how to fix something in your house or your car. Maybe you're just having fun. You found a passion. You want to learn everything about drones or motorcycle mechanics or pastel watercolors or something. And you just, learning is fun. And that's honestly my favorite kind of learning. And it just depends on the context of, why do you need to learn what you're interested in right now? Like, what's the reason behind that?
Yeah, I think that's a good place for us to stop. It's been a really interesting first half of the show. We've got some other fabulous topics to discuss with one of the powerhouses of WordPress entrepreneurship, Chris Badgett from Lifter LMS. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Tired of hosting providers that can't handle high traffic loads? Convessio is here to help. Our platform can handle any amount of traffic, all without slowdown or crashing. With immediate Slack support, performance optimization, and a team that thrives on resolving technical challenges, your e-commerce business is in safe hands. Learn more about Convessio at convessio.com.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Lifter LMS, the leading learning management system solution for WordPress. If you or your client are creating any kind of online course, training-based membership website, or any type of e-learning project, Lifter LMS is the most secure, stable, well-supported solution on the market. Go to lifterlms.com and save 20% at checkout with coupon code podcast20. That's podcast20. Enjoy the rest of your show.
We're coming back, folks. We've had a fantastic first half. We've had a discussion about WordPress and AI and e-learning, and Chris has coped with it as he normally does with my fragmented thoughts and my wandering. But before we go into the second half, just want to point out, if you're looking for a great WordPress hosting partner, and we specialize in learning management systems, membership, and community-based WordPress-powered websites, and you're looking for a great hosting partner that is much more than that, that also offers some fantastic packages to the WordPress professional, why don't you look at partnering with WP Tonic? You can find more by going over to wp-tonic.com/partners, wp-tonic.com/partners, and let's work together. So let's go on to Gutenberg. Obviously, there's been a lot of discussion lately. It dies down, it erupts. I get people to comment, come on the show, and then I lose interest, really, Chris. And then I think it's dying down, and then it erupts again. And last few weeks, the eruption has come from some major YouTube influencers in the WordPress space. Really, quite severe criticism of where Gutenberg is from people who are not normally just labeled as Gutenberg haters. Then over the last couple of days, you've had Kevin Gary promoting some solution. I've signed up for one of his presentations. An excellent marketing job Kevin is doing for his own book of business, but you've got to admire him. And he's been on the show a couple of times, and I don't agree with everything Kevin says, but some of the key areas I do think he has a position that can't be just dismissed, which seems to be a bit evident on some part of the WordPress community that just wants him to go away and just have a mindset which I'm not prepared to engage in. So what's your own thoughts about where we find Gutenberg? What, and some of the criticisms that Kevin's kind of aims at the whole situation. Have you got any thoughts about this, Chris?
I would say generally I'm a fan of Gutenberg and full site editing. I'm not a developer, and the tools it gives me to be able to build websites and templates and save patterns and all this, I find very useful. Sometimes I hit challenges with it, though. Like, for some reason, on one of my sites, even though I've saved changes, every time I exit the tab, it tells me there's unsaved changes in the blocks, but there's not. Yesterday, I was actually working on a site, and I could not figure out. I didn't have a bunch of time, and I would have figured it out eventually, but I could not figure out how to do what I wanted to do on the menu. And so for me, the menu has always been like a little bit of a sticking point. Like, the old WordPress way of managing the menu was easy and it just worked. And I'm still struggling with getting it working properly. However, that being said, as a non-developer, if I want to build a fancy header that has buttons and all these elements, like a WooCommerce cart thing and menu and maybe a opt-in form or something, I could figure that out in Gutenberg. I would have been able to do that before. So I'm a fan. I think it's just interesting the world where we find ourselves in terms of, okay, Elementor is still big, Beaver Builder, Brizzy, all these things, all these page builders. So there's like this parallel universe happening, which I find interesting. As a product creator, it does make our job harder, particularly in support, when you're building for these two universes, those that use Gutenberg, those that don't. And, you know, that it's like sort of like double work in a way. But that's okay. Like, there's a place for that. And I like that people have different choices into how they build their website. We just did at Lifter LMS some usability testing. We actually hired a testing service called usertesting.com, and they basically record, you know, 5 to 1-hour-long videos about, we give them a goal to set up a course and sell it. And that's recorded, and they talk into the microphone about what they're thinking, what they're trying to do, and all this. And it was very enlightening. And to me, I could immediately see lots of areas of improvement, because when you get used to a tool, whether it's WordPress or the old WordPress or Gutenberg or Beaver Builder, Elementor, Brizzy, whatever, all those things, you kind of become used to it. You get blind and you forget that you had a learning curve there. So what I'd love to see with the Gutenberg project is maybe for a quarter, half a year, to like freeze new feature development and just focus on usability. And I think that would be
you must have read my mind, because that's what I was going to share. I think I'm speaking for Kevin, but I think there's three main areas that I do see that I wouldn't say I totally agree, but I see where you're coming from. I think I totally agree with what you've just said, because I think there is a usability UX problem with this new elements that have been bolted on that don't really match with other parts of the CRM. And I think that's disjointing to a large extent.
That's one area for sure. I just want to say is that design element of when you're in the full site editor versus in the regular WordPress admin, it's a little much. And I had a lot of sympathy for the challenge. Like Lifter LMS is complex. It does a lot of things. There's a lot of settings. It's hard to design.
It's linked to this driving philosophy that backward compatibility is all, must be all embracing the Microsoft model. And don't get me wrong, I personally think there's a middle road. I think backward compatibility is really important so you don't end up with a Joomla or Drupal situation, which their handling really damaged those open source platforms to some extent. But on the other hand, I think you can take it too far as well. But that's only my personal opinion. I think the other criticism that Kevin is correct is that there's different micro communities that make up the bigger WordPress professional community. And one of those micro communities is the one person or three person WordPress agency that has a skill set that's based on PHP, CSS, HTML with some graphic design ability that can't get into the world of JavaScript. And they're increasingly getting frustrated with a lot of the power and functionality, which is class-based CSS. And CSS is moving and developing at an enormous pace. They're getting increasingly frustrated with a lot of the power not being available because it's locked in to a React JSON platform. And I think that's causing a lot of resentment. And finally, I think just the way that the project is managed, and nobody really, there doesn't seem to be any clear path. That might be unfair, but that does seem to be the general feel of the thing. What's your reactions with what I've just outlined?
It's a micro example of a macro story that we've been talking about. Exponential rate of technology change for humans is difficult. And, you know, in many ways, AI is here to help. So when you have knowledge gaps, let's say as a developer and you're trying to cross the bridge into JavaScript, you could use AI as a tutor, even just ChatGPT, to help you learn. But there, it goes back to what we discussed earlier about what's your motivation for learning. And I think one of the strongest assets, and this is really part of our company culture at Lifter LMS, is that there's change is happening. So you have to be a lifelong learner to, you know, really excel at Lifter. And I think that's true in the whole world. Like, if you found your system and your process, you know, as a one-person agency, but the world's changing around you, like, it's not a, that's a precarious position to be in. And so investing in your own learning is important. But I also get the idea of being a business. You've spent all this time, like, learning tools and perfecting your process, and you just want to keep it the way it is. And there's nothing wrong with that either.
Well, I think it goes further a little bit than that, because I think with the developments, the ongoing and accelerated developments of CSS and what it can do in a modern browser, the way that Gutenberg has been developed, a lot of these people that can do amazing things with CSS, with modern CSS, they don't have access to it. They're divorced from that power by using native Gutenberg builders. They can't get access to a lot of this increasing and ever accelerating CSS power. And that makes them extremely unhappy with the whole project. Can you see where I'm coming from, Chris?
I can, and I would just say that ultimately the market decides. So in this case, the agencies decide which tools they're going to use, and this is how, you know, technology has a, you know, a life cycle, or businesses have a life cycle. So either it's kind of a tale of two worlds. The customer or user needs to adapt, and then the technology needs to adapt and, you know, pick a market. Or if you want to be abroad, like WordPress and us at Lifter, because people use a lot of different ways, you have to like evolve, but also be sensitive to the community of users and try to keep them in the tent, if you will.
Yeah, I think that's well, Paul. Over to you, Kurt, for the next question.
Well, I was just thinking, as you guys were talking, I am really quite a schizophrenic on the whole Gutenberg subject. There's parts of me where I'm like, hey, it's the tool. I'm an agency. I use it. So it's like WordPress, it works. I can build sites. Lifter LMS, I can take that, but it works. But then there's people that are, I think, much more sound when they think things through. Like Katie Keith from Barn2 had a post on X, and she listed out all of the things in the user experience that she thought was inconsistent. And then as I read the post, which was a long post, I was like, oh yeah, that is distracting. Oh yeah, that too. And I was like, all those things that I don't consciously think of because I'm just a dude running a business using the tool, right? Like, but other people would come into the environment and see it as a user experience obstacle, right? But we don't recognize the obstacle because we're immersed in it all the time. So that bipolar schizophrenic side of me is always at conflict because part of me wants to just produce. And the other part of me is like, I don't want to have to figure it out for everybody. It's just the tool is what it is.
You know, I have a great framework in how to think about that, which is, I'd give credit if I could remember where I heard this, but it was basically that great companies have three characters in them: a hipster, which is a designer, a hacker, which is a coder, and a hustler, which is a marketer, salesperson, business builder, so on. And many of us were a combination of these things. But if you look at the Gutenberg project, when you were saying, Kurt, I'm just trying to build a website, that's what a hustler would say. What Jonathan was saying is he was getting into the code. That's what a hacker would say. Katie Keith has a strong design eye, a hipster. So when she's seeing inconsistency, this is how a designer experiences incongruency and so on. So I often use that framework to like try to level up myself in all those areas. You know, I'm not a great designer myself, so I don't necessarily notice all that design stuff the way a strong designer would, but I try to level up in my design eye over time. Same with, not so much with hacking. I'm just not much of a coder. I'm more of a hustler, but I try to understand at least at a high level what's going on.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, the next question that we had was driving us back to AI. And if you just share with us, Chris, like, What are your go-to AI tools? You've mentioned ChatGPT, but I'm sure there's a couple more in your quiver. What kind of things do you run to for assistance?
I'd say ChatGPT is the main one. You know, I'm on the pro version. I've also built custom GPTs. Like, I've had one that was trained on our podcast, LMS Cast, so it could like literally look at 10 years of me interviewing people and like use that as like a knowledge base, and it works okay. But that's an example where that still needs to improve. Sometimes it hallucinates or talks about a guest that was on there and stuff like that. I'm an experimenter, particularly with learning and just communication in general. I've experimented a lot with like language translation AI, both for videos, audios, and text. I find that really interesting. For the image generation, I use several. Probably my favorite is a public GPT called Cosmic Dream, I think. And it does like really kind of wild images. Sometimes I'll use for pieces of featured images or blog posts and things like that. Those are really the main ones I've used. I'll tell you what I'm not a fan of is like, I can tell just the amount of prospecting outbound sales spam I get in my email inbox. I know people are using AI to both write these emails, to build email lists, to like maybe run these campaigns for them. I find that really annoying.
Yeah.
But
yeah, when you get really good at LinkedIn, you become a target, and your inbox just fills up with just absolute garbage. And I wish that Microsoft and LinkedIn, their partnership, would do a better job of filtering some of that out, because it's painfully obvious that that stuff is not from a human.
I'll say one more that is really awesome as a podcaster and a video creator and course creator is Descript, which is a video audio editing tool. Yesterday, I made like a 2-minute commercial for Lifter, basically. And they have this feature called Studio Sound where the AI can take out all the ums and ahs, which I'm terrible at, and just improve the audio quality. I have a decent microphone, but it just sounds 10 times better when the AI cleans up the audio. And I can't recommend Descript highly enough.
Excellent. Thanks. Jonathan?
Yeah, is there any AI tools or services that the company Lifter LMS has been utilizing effectively from your team?
Yeah, I mean, we're an AI forward company. So like GitHub Copilot, you know, our developers use that. ChatGPT, everybody uses. I'm not sure what else we might be using, but I'm sure there's more. I know my business partner Jason and Kim are big AI people, and they use AI for lots of different things. I'd ask Kurt, what does he use? I think you're muted, Kurt.
I was going to type in AI forward company into the comments. I thought that was a cool catch line. And I didn't want my keyboard clacking away. For me, Jonathan brought this guy named Ryan Roberts on the podcast that was pimping this thing called Write Blogger.
Okay.
And at the time, I was hurting on creating content for Mañana No Mas because I was busy on so many other things. And so I leveraged that tool, and I really liked, because I didn't have to become a prompt genius in ChatGPT to get something to do what I wanted it to do. He built a tool that, like, the prompts are already built for AI. So I'm like, make me an outline, turn that outline into an article. Let me review that article. Let me copy and paste sections of that. Let me add to that. You can put in a YouTube video, and it gives you a synopsis article without being a transcript, which is one of the tools I really like. So that's one of my go-tos. And then I play a lot with the different AIs. So instead of relying on OpenAI, ChatGPT, GPT, I'll go to Claude, I'll go to Llama, I'll go to different ones, and I'll try and compare the outputs and then see which one is giving me more bias than another. But then I realize, here comes the caveat with AI, it's supposed to save me time, right? So if I'm going to three separate tools and reading and comparison, I haven't saved any time. So for me, it's a personal struggle on that balance of AI versus organic work and trying to stay productive.
One more for just you out there listening or watching. AI for SEO is really powerful. And for me personally, SEO is kind of a lifelong journey thing, figuring it out. But in terms of really good SEO for blogging, starts with what's called a content brief. And, and before that, it's like keywords. But when you build I can't remember the name of the tool, but I've used this tool. If I'm targeting a certain phrase and sub phrases to help me, it'll find all the top ranking articles, and it'll help me figure out like the headings and basically the structure of the article, which then helps you build a strong content brief. I found that one really fun and fascinating. And when I used it, I brought one of our articles from like ranking 23rd to number one. It stays in the number 1, 2, 3 spot. And I couldn't have done as good a job without that AI tool to help do all that research for me. So that one actually did save me time.
I saw Jonathan smirking when you were talking about SEO, and I thought to myself, you know how they have those speed building challenges for websites? I think we should pick a topic, and it should be an SEO standoff between Jonathan and Chris to see who can rank a subject higher.
I saw Jonathan get one of his articles above mine the other day, and I was like, yeah, how did he do that? That's one of my best. But we could do a whole...
I'm everywhere. I'm a content producing machine that Kirk will testify. We got our last question, then probably Kirk will have to go off to do some work for Lifter. And hopefully Chris might be able to stay on because I want to have a little chat about burnout and how Chris sees the signs and how he deals with it. Are you okay with that, Chris? Sure. But our final question is my time machine and my Doctor Who. So if you had your own time machine, your own on G Wells or your TARDIS from Doctor Who, and you could go back to the beginning of your career and you just, not nothing fat dramatic, but if you could just whisper in your own ear at the beginning of your career and just give yourself a quick 10-minute bit of mentorship, what would be one or maybe two quick things you wished you had known at the beginning of it, Chris?
Well, one of them is...
Don't come on this podcast.
Besides that, one of them is, we were talking about the hipster, the hacker, and the hustler. A really big one is, particularly in marketing, but just really communication and content in general, is that people have different consumption style. Some people watch videos, some people listen to audios, some people read. Those are kind of the main ones. I personally am more of an audio and video consumer, and I'm not a bad writer. I'm not a fast typer, but if I could go back in time, I would encourage my earlier business self to write more, study the craft of writing more, study SEO sooner, younger. But if you're already strong at those things, I would encourage you to, try the other ones, start a podcast, experiment with the audio format, get into YouTube as soon as possible. And just because you like to consume content primarily in a certain way, if you're business building, you really need to kind of have all those. Otherwise, you're just missing a third or two thirds of your market. So that would be one big one. The other one would just be to, try to sleep a little more, manage your energy a little better. It's really hard to start a company, particularly when you're bootstrapping. And, entrepreneurs can be really hard on themselves. And I've always tried to, maintain my health and fitness and sleep and mental attitude and stuff, but building a business is hard on all parts of life. So take care of it. Build yourself as much as you try to build your company.
Yeah, I think when I'm getting close to it is that I can be very sarcastic, as you have noticed. But when I'm getting close to burnout, I tend to have emotional outbursts. And I'm normally, and then it goes away. But it's a kind of release mechanism. I just get really worked up and then I just explode.
Hey, there's
I'm glad I can be there for you in those moments.
You see a couple of them, Kurt. They don't happen too regularly. I think you've observed about 2 to 3 of them over 18-month period, but they do happen. But in general, I try to think I'm a reasonably logical person, and you've got a logical argument. I think you stand a chance of influencing me. I think you're the same, Chris. I think, you listen to anybody as long as you think that they're not a total idiot and there's some logic somewhere in their argument.
One quick thing there I just want to throw in is I'm a lifelong learner. So recently I signed up for Masterclass and there's this psychology class on there about relationships. See you, Kurt. And there was this thing about conflict where people are usually either aggressive or blowout, like you described. And then other people are kind of retreaters. So I'm more of a retreater. Based on what you're telling me, it sounds like you're more of a combustible.
I always have been. I think it comes from my mother. My mother could be volatile sometimes. Who knows? That's a bit, bless her little heart. So I think we're going to wrap up the podcast part of the show. If you really want to support the podcast, folks, why don't you sign up for the WP Tonic newsletter? It has a load of stuff every week about tech, WordPress, and anything else that comes on my radar. It's quite unique because I formulate it. So you can sign up for that by going over to wp-tonic.com/newsletter. wp-tonic.com/newsletter. Please do that because I take that as a great sign of support for the show. So, Chris, what's the best way for people to find out more about you and Lifter LMS?
Just head on over to lifterlms.com, download the free plugin if you haven't used it yet. And I also have a podcast for course creators and WordPress professionals called LMS Cast. And on social media, I'm the easiest to reach at Twitter.
And we're going to have a bonus session where we're going to be talking about burnout and maybe go back to a quick roundup about e-learning. You can watch the whole show by going over to the WP Tonic YouTube channel, and you'll be able to watch the pod part, the podcast part, and the bonus content there. We will be back next week with our great roundtable show, which hopefully Chris will be part of. Got some guests for that show. It's always a laugh. I am merciless in the way I take the mickey out of my fellow WordPress professional community, but it's all in good jest and fun. We will be back next week. We'll see you soon, folks. Bye. So let's continue. So how do you see the signs of burnout in yourself? What starts triggering that you feel burnout is occurring, and then you've got to do something about it? What are some of the signs in yourself?
Well, first I'd say I think most people usually don't see it because you're just in it. And I think it's particularly common in entrepreneurs who are just working hard. And it's almost like, I would imagine, I'm not a soldier, but when a soldier comes back from war, sometimes they can't turn it off. And they're just kind of in what's known as battle fatigue, and they kind of get caught in that loop. So, but what I notice when things over, you know, I try to develop mindfulness and self-awareness. It's like a ongoing life's work thing. So when I really pay attention, things I notice are lower energy, lower excitement, maybe quick to either anger or retreating, pulling back, one of those. I notice that I'm just not as engaged, like in my work or personal life. So I'm just that when people acknowledge and say, like, that's what burnout feels like. It's just, I'm not that engaged with the world. I'm not that engaged with the work. I'm not that engaged with myself. But at the same time, I have to keep all that going forward. And that's where you're kind of caught in the loop of battle fatigue or burnout. So that's what it feels like. And I don't think you really feel it or see it until you start to come out of it, or you come out of it, or you make some serious progress in the positive direction.
Well, you've got a lot more responsibility than me. I've got no children and I'm not in a long-term relationship. You're married, you've got children. Plus, you're running a medium-sized company. You've got people relying on your leadership for their income to various extents. Plus, you've got partners. You've got a lot of responsibility on your shoulders, and these people expect leadership from you. So that's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a lot. It's for whatever reason, I've always been good at taking on responsibility, but it's definitely can lead to burnout easily. So, you know, sometimes I look at YouTube as an example, and I see these videos about like finding motivation, and it doesn't click with me because I'm like always motivated. There's plenty to do. Like I have vision. I know what to do, or I have goals I'm moving towards. But that's a double-edged sword. It's like, it's a lot to manage. It's a lot to juggle. So, yeah, but having, I think, you know, particularly in your 30s and 40s, particularly if you have a family and it's just a challenging time. In your 50s, it's all challenging at, you know, different layers and ages of life. But, you know, midlife, if you will, is I think, where a lot of burnout happens. And the responsibility stack is kind of the deepest it's going to be in your life, I think. So that's the challenge.
Can I go back to the WordPress community? Obviously, people, you can't please everybody. There's some people that just don't like you. And I'm fine with it. I'm not everybody's cup of tea. And there's some people, it takes a fair bit for me to have real animosity to certain individuals, but it is there because I just find them awful. And I'm sure there's some people that find me awful. But in general, most people have different views because they're passionate. And one of the strengths of the WordPress community, the professional, the power user, the real hobbyist, is they're very passionate about WordPress to a level that you wouldn't find in SaaS products generally, in my opinion. And it's one of the strengths, the wider WordPress community, because for various factors, as you pointed out in the podcast part of this interview, that unlike Wix or some of the other SaaS, you know, in your own area, Kajabi or Learnable, you just don't have the marketing budget of some of these SaaS players. But you've got, in some ways, something even more powerful, the wider WordPress community, the agencies, the people that use Lifter LMS and love it. And the same to a wider level, WordPress in general. I noticed that Matt Medeiros was having a chat and he said that for over 20 years, it's been part of him. And he's very passionate still about seeing the best for WordPress. And I think most of us are. But there's also, there seems to be a bad side to that passion, which is a group for rejecting any consistent and honest criticism, not accepting that things aren't going right and there needs to be a rethink. And instead of listening to constructive criticism, that can go to a level where it becomes corrosive. I do accept that, but not accepting obvious things and really dealing with them sincerely rather than just saying it's a communication problem. I think some of the things that we've talked about in this show is more than just communication. There are some fundamental problems that need to be sorted out. Do you think it seems to be recently getting worse, the more corrosive and unhelpful element? Would you agree with that, or do you think you wouldn't?
Well, I mean, I do see stuff that kind of gets out of hand on social media or whatever. But there's a difference with WordPress in the sense that it's decentralized. In a way, you could make an argument in some ways it is centralized.
It seems to be both at the same time, doesn't it?
Well, what you can't do is use methods from the centralized world to solve problems in a decentralized culture. So what I mean by that is, and this is another example of how things are changing so fast, like these online communities and decentralization of power and all this stuff is actually pretty new ideas, new technology in the human experience. But part of decentralization is there's no police, right? That's something from the centralized world. So And there is people with more or less power in WordPress, but it's also in the same way, like people can do things all over the place and they can do whatever they want with the software. So that creates situations like we have with, there's not just one way to build a website. So this page builder thinks this, Gutenberg thinks that. This person doesn't want to use WordPress anymore. So there's just a lot of freedom as well. So, and then the other part is, just my general approach, I'm not the type of person who would like quit social media on a tirade, but I do believe and have observed and experienced, and probably to some degree myself, behave differently on the internet than if I was in a room with these people. So I think the challenge for online communities is, it's harder to be civil for some reason. And I don't know.
I think you're spot on, but I think there's hardly anybody in the world that I agree with everything they think and say. Now, I really listen to Matt Medeiros. Always listen to what he's saying. I don't agree with everything, every viewpoint that comes out of his mouth. I doubt if he agrees with much that comes out of mine. But Kevin Geary, I think he's got some really good points. I don't agree with everything that comes out of his mouth. Because most of this is grey. There is no right and wrong.
Right. And here's the trick I use. And I think this just comes with experience and time. So, for example, it's common in a software company to get somebody who's angry and rude and support and kind of goes off. And this is that thing where if we were in a room together, they probably wouldn't talk this way. But I've developed thick skin, and user or customer, I care about that. I want their experience. I want them to be able to do what they need to do. But there's also boundaries of like what the software does or doesn't do and so on. But even when the tone or the delivery is not great, I'm still open to the idea that that person may have an idea or something that could help. And I think that's the key with criticism, is to always look for the diamond in the rough. And sometimes there'll be no diamond. There's just not. But oftentimes there is. Maybe a small diamond, maybe a big diamond. And that's the key to criticism. So when you look at something like the Gutenberg Project as an example, or WordPress Core or whatever, because it's decentralized.
I want to butt in, as I'm sorry, but when you were saying that the interface, I think it can't be disputed that most of the people that have any influence in the WordPress professional power user, apart from one or two that I won't call them out personally, but it's not appropriate, but it's because it's just my opinion. I see them as kind of WordPress automatic propagandists, and my own independence to some extent is important to me, and I see them as kind of just propagandists. But those that are like Matt Medeiros, Paul from WP Tut, other people in the WordPress influence space, they've all called for what you outlined, that there should be a sustained period of not adding any more features to Gutenberg, and to have a period where resources are concentrated on sorting out the actual interface, the UX, and a serious community discussion about what should be done, Gutenberg's process afterwards. And also I'm very frustrated with the way that automatic is managed and run, because it makes little sense to me, because I just see that they're missing an enormous opportunity to build a real competitor on WordPress.com, a real competitor to Shopify, and really take the fight to one of the most successful SaaS platforms in the last 8 years, which is Shopify, and really take the fight to Shopify. And I think Automattic could be hugely successful in doing that. And they just don't, there doesn't seem to be any focus really, Chris. But there's nothing I can do about it. It's not my business really.
Well, I mean, I'd like to let everybody run their own race. And in terms of that, I mean, there's no reason. One of the things that's really fascinated me with WordPress is the opportunity for the WAS, the website as a service, like you do at WP Tonic. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a big company, a small company, a medium company. Like, everybody could innovate and build a superior e-commerce solution to Shopify.
Would you agree? Because I just feel that with WooCommerce, Woo, and I just feel that WordPress.com is a little bit lost as a platform. And if they really concentrated on getting Gutenberg, which will never be finished, but getting it to a bit of a better position, and then really concentrate on offering a really superb e-commerce solution with the benefit of when you need to really customize the solution, you've got all the power and community of WordPress, the WordPress.org community. It seems to me to be a win-win for both parties. And I just don't understand why they don't see it and why they won't act on it. But what do I know, Chris?
I don't have a view on the inner workings of the company, but I would say I've always been fascinated with the slogan, all the power of WordPress without the hassle. Or so what I mean by that is that if somebody could, an e-commerce, aspiring e-commerce store owner could come into a service that builds a website that works just as good as Shopify, but has 10 times the customizability without it being overwhelming. That's how I think about e-learning as well. And I hope lots of people use the tools to, you know, build awesome e-learning sites that are, that their users love, that the owner of the platform loves and finds easy to use.
And just to finish off the WordPress as a service, I think that got popular as a concept, and there's still, everybody is trying to find this middle road. But for some reason, I think it, one of the problems, because it was based on a WordPress multi-site, and I think that, so it came, it's retired, but I think now it's coming back. You're seeing like one of your competitors, you know, in your space, there's Learn Dash has a hosted element. And I had a conversation with Tom from Conversio, and they've got now their own marketing automation platform. And you're seeing various hosting and, to some extent, what I'm trying to offer at WP Tonic. So I sense that everybody, a lot of players, are looking at this, but they're all in a kind of dark room, kind of moving around to find something that will gel, that can be this middle road between fully SaaS and a classical WordPress build out environment. Would you agree with that?
I think the multi-tenancy website thing has always been part of the WordPress story. Like you mentioned, multi-site, it's been around for a long time. It's part of our shared story, and it's just a great area for innovation in our space. And once, as a community, we unlock that, not just for e-commerce and e-learning, it could have that boom.
Just to finish off, I'm not being rude, but I think the problem is that this balance area, this sweet place where you haven't, because it can never be fully locked down as a SaaS. But also it doesn't, as Spencer Forum mentions, this flea market. I think people are attempting to find a middle ground, but I don't think anybody's found totally the sweet point. I think they're all having a bit of a dance to try and find it individually where this sweet spot of not being a total flea market, but not trying to be the worst of all worlds, which is being a WordPress SaaS. Because,
yeah.
Do you think there's anything to what I've just said?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a big challenge, and it's for the entrepreneurs and innovators to figure out, but to balance ease of use with power and customizability and flexibility is a big ask. It's possible, and people are innovating in that area, but I think it's early days for that. And because of the decentralized nature of the WordPress, you know, technology ecosystem and people building things different ways and so on without standardization, I think that's what you mean by the flea market style. It's hard. It just presents another challenge of how do we integrate the parts to make just this clean, elegant, you know, solution for a use case or a client or our own project. I think we'll get there. I think if we talk about this in 5 years from now, there'll be more, I think there'll be better solutions out there and more innovation in terms of the SaaS-like experience with WordPress. And this goes back to AI as well. If AI can help, we'll innovate faster in this department.
I think it's time to end on that. Chris has been very generous with his time. We've had a fantastic discussion. We've covered a lot in this interview. Thank you so much, Chris. Hopefully you'll be able to join us next week, Chris, for their roundtable show. But it's been a great interview. We're going to end it now. We'll see you next week, folks. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. We really do appreciate it. Why not visit the Mastermind Facebook group? And also, to keep up with the latest news, click wp-tonic.com/newsletter. We'll see you next time.